All right. Amen. Well, I got to say, I'm definitely excited to be here, and I want to thank Pastor Shelley for inviting me. It's been great. I love this building that you guys have here. And I have been to Texas before, but it was a long time ago. I think it was 2006 is when I was here last, and so it's great to be here again. And I want to thank all of you for showing up, and if I haven't got to meet you yet, you know, please say hi after the service. I look forward to spending some time and fellowshipping with you guys. I've been watching you guys for a long time, you know, since the beginning. I've been rejoicing with you guys through your victories and praying for you guys through your struggles, you know. And the biggest struggles, obviously, are having Dylan, Ben, and Alberto. I can, I you know, we have the same kind of guys in our church. No, I'm just kidding. Those guys are great. I'm just teasing. But no, seriously, just glad to be here, and again, don't leave before saying hi, you know, even if I've offended you, you know, it's all good, we can definitely get over it, all right? So, again, let's go ahead and get this thing started here. So, we're in 1 Samuel chapter number 30, and just to give you some background here, this is the time period where David has been with Achish, king of Gath, and the Philistines, and if you remember, Saul had been trying to kill David and trying to hunt him down. And so David comes up with this idea, well, you know, I better just go to the Philistines because Saul certainly won't find me there. He's not going to come try to, you know, attack me over the land of the Philistines. And so he comes up with this idea to go to the land of the Philistines. And Achish, king of Gath, gives him a place for him and his family and the families of his men called Ziklag, okay? And so you know how the story goes. It comes to a point in time where the Philistines are going to wage war with Israel. The five lords of the Philistines say, hey, Achish, what are you doing with this guy David here and all these Hebrews? What were you thinking? Send him back to where, you know, he belongs. Basically, tell him to go back to Ziklag. And so we're going to pick the story up where David has come back to Ziklag and realizes that his family and the family of his men have been kidnapped by the Amalekites. So if you would, look down at verse number 6. 1 Samuel chapter number 30, look down at verse number 6. It says this, and David was greatly distressed. Let's stop right there. Okay, so David was greatly distressed. Why? Because he's got 600 men that are weeping, the Bible says, until they can weep no more. So he realizes the decision that he made to go to the land of Philistines, it didn't just affect him, but it affected the 600 men and their families along with him. And look at this next part there. So it says, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself before the Lord his God, okay? And so, obviously, David is under a tremendous amount of grief right now because of the decision that he's made, because he doesn't know what's happened to his family, the family of the men that he led, but also because now these 600 people are speaking of stoning him. They literally want to put him to death because of that decision. So what does David do? Well, he encourages himself in the Lord. So he goes to Abiathar the priest and he says, hey, we need to inquire the Lord and figure out what to do, which obviously could preach all by itself. And so jump down to verse number 9, if you would. It says this, so David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left behind stayed. Okay? So what I see here are two groups of people. There's 600 of type number one. There's 600 people that are at a total loss. They see a problem, a very big problem. Family's gone. Family's been kidnapped. And they become paralyzed by this problem. And then I see one guy who's faced with the same problem, who has extra stress on him because now his men want to stone him. And he becomes mobilized by this problem. And so here's the deal. Anytime you can take 600 people that want to stone you and turn them around and make them follow you into battle, you're a boss, okay? That is exactly what you are. You are a boss. The title of my sermon this morning is, are you a boss or a total loss? Are you a boss or a total loss? Now, I get how the world uses that, you know, that term, right? Oh, he's such a boss, and, you know, I'll get into that more here in a moment. But we need to reclaim this word, because the title of a boss, somebody who's in charge, somebody who takes ownership for the role that they've been assigned, you know, that is a real boss. Not what the world says, right? A lot of people, oh, LeBron James, he's such a boss. Oh, you know, all these UFC guys, they're such bosses. No, they're a bunch of losers is what they are. They are a total loss, okay? And so this sermon is designed to help us overcome what I call boss prevention. Because there's a lot of philosophies, there's a lot of teachings, there's a lot of problems that we all face that prevent us from becoming bosses. And here's what I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about husband and wife being co-members, you know, and stuff like that. Okay, so we'll get to that, but that's definitely not what I'm talking about here. Now, keep your place there in 1 Samuel because we will come back to it, but if you would, turn to 1 Timothy chapter number 4. 1 Timothy chapter number 4. And so we got to realize, you know, bosses, they don't get to control, I mean, they don't get to lose control of their emotions, right? David, he didn't have that option. You know, he's faced with the same thing that his men were faced with and even greater. And he doesn't get to say, oh, woe is me, what are we going to do? I'm such a loser. And just throw himself down on the ground and throw a little temper tantrum. Start playing the blame game. Start playing the victim game. He didn't do that. What he did is he saw a problem, a great problem, a problem that probably none of us in here have ever even experienced. And what does he do? He becomes mobilized. He encourages himself in the Lord. And that's what we're going to learn from today, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Just to kind of show you what this looks like, you know what a boss is? A boss is somebody who puts up a billboard that says the Sodomite deception in 2021. That's a boss. You know what a total loss is? Somebody who holds a Make America Straight Again conference, and then a year later posts a clip of some guy preaching at his church saying that trannies can be saved. That, my friends, is a total loss. And I know that might sound harsh, but that's reality. And you know what? Part of being a boss, part of being a boss in Christianity is speaking the truth, whether it be in season or out of season.
That's right.
1 Timothy chapter number 4, I want to show you why this is so important here. Look down at verse number 12, it says this. It says, let no man despise thy youth. So Paul's telling Timothy this, the pastor this. He says, hey, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. Now notice these next things that follow. In word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You notice what he's telling Timothy there? He's saying, hey, Timothy, when people look at you, I want them to say, you know what, that's just how a pastor should be. I want them to think, oh, that's how all Christians are. So what he's saying is these things apply to all of us. We all need to be that example that's listed here. I mean, if we were to just stretch this out, these six attributes here, word, conversation, right? How you converse with the new man versus the old man. If we were to stretch all of those out into a job description, do you know what you have? You have a leadership position. So don't sit here this morning and think, well, I don't have a leadership role. That's okay. That's fine. Not everyone can have a leadership role in the church or at your work. Right? But you're all leaders because the Bible is saying here that leadership is influence. Leadership is influence. That is so true. And then because we know that, right? Because we know that, we need to live that. We need to know what that means for us. And look, in this day and age, we need a bunch of people that are willing to be the example. Right? Because these liberals out here, they're not cutting it. They're not making it work. They're not doing us any favors whatsoever. They're not bosses. They're total losses.
Right.
Anytime they run into a problem, anytime a sodomite comes to their church, they're like, oh, yes, I'll do whatever you want. Oh, well, whatever you want, I'll do it. Right? We're not going to be like that.
Right.
And this is why we preach these types of sermons. This is why we need this type of teaching in our lives. Is because the temptation out there from our families, right? From our neighbors, from our coworkers, the temptation and the pressure that they try to put on us, it's all around, right? And there's always that old man willing to say, just this one time, just compromise. Don't speak your mind. Don't say it. Just don't say it. Don't say that sodomites are foul. Don't say this. Don't say that. You know, just be calm, right? We need to learn how to overcome that. We need to be comfortable with the position that God has given us, which is listed right here amongst many other places. You can leave your place there, but go to John chapter number 3. John chapter number 3. And so I get a lot of these sermon ideas because I do appliance repair. And so I go to people's houses all the time, and I talk with a lot of different people. And just recently, I was in this house, and it was a faux Christian's house. There's a lot of those up where we live. And this guy's saying, you know, I heard that you are a preacher. You know, you're a pastor. And he starts telling me about all these liberal guys that he listens to. like Stephen Furtick, you know, that sort, some other guy, Greg Groeschel, you know, these mega church type pastors. And he's like, the thing I like about them is they're such bosses. And I'm like, I've got to preach this sermon. You know, how could you look at a dude wearing skinny jeans that he clearly had somebody paint on for him and didn't even do a good job and say, oh, there's a boss. Hey, there's somebody that I would like to look up to. You're crazy. But that's the world that we live in today. And I heard one even worse than that, like a couple houses later. This person's, you know, double masked. You just, you know, that whole thing. Just, have you got your shot yet? You know what I want to do now? I mean, this is what I'm going to start doing. I'm saying, do you have AIDS? Because I thought it was kind of like bad manners to start asking people about their medical things, you know, and their history. So I'm going to start doing that. And so I'm going to look for another job also while I do that. But, you know. But he's like, you know what? I'm just really big on this stuff. Because, you know, Dr. Fauci, he has to put up with a lot. You know, he's a lot of criticism. He's such a boss. This guy's got a polka dot mask on. I'm like, if you think Dr. Fauci's a boss, don't even listen to this sermon, man, because there, I don't think there's any hope for you. That guy's like beyond a loss, okay? But seriously, you know, you little kids, you munchkins out there that can listen to my voice, you need to understand that leadership applies to you as well. You guys need to realize, you need to take ownership of the fact that you're a child, and when your mom and dad tell you to do something, you need to decide that you're going to own that. You're going to do that. You're not going to be like these other rugrats that are out in town that are kicking and punching their moms and cussing them out. I see it every single day where these kids are just running their parents. Uh-uh, that's not how it's supposed to be. You guys are better than that, and you know that, you know. In your teens, you know, you guys are about to head into the adult years. Now is the final time for preparation. You need to decide right now that you're going to, you know, you're going to listen to these things here. You need to work on being a leader. You need to work on your bossology, if you would, right now. Because it doesn't just come automatically. You're not going to just turn 18, 19, 20, get a job, and automatically be that person. It starts now. You need to learn to do some things. You know what? And obviously, moms, dads, husbands, wives, you have a leadership role. God has given you a specific role, and you need to rejoice in the fact that it's different. A wife's job, a wife's role is different in the home than a husband's. And you need to rejoice and own that, because the world's always looking to you for you to fail. They're always going to try to pressure you. Don't let your husband say that, you know? And these guys, I'm serious, these guys out there are like, oh, I just love my wife, you know? I got to ask my wife before I can spend this $200 to fix the refrigerator. Never mind that the food's rotting. We just went to Costco yesterday. I got to ask the boss. That's weak. That's ridiculous. And if you're an elder in here, you know what? Don't just sit here, oh, my time's expired. My time's gone. No, you have more value than you could possibly imagine. You have lived a life filled with experience, victories and struggles. And you know what? That wisdom that you have, we need it very, very badly. It is crucial to these churches. Don't think that you don't matter. Don't think that you don't have anything to offer, because it's a lie. So we're going to go ahead and move on here. John chapter number 3. And so what I want you to do as we read these verses is just kind of remember the position that John the Baptist, who is a boss, by the way, remember the position, the assignment that he was given. It was to prepare the way for the Messiah. And what you're going to see here is his mission, his purpose becomes challenged. And I want you to notice how he responds. So if you would, look at verse number 23. John chapter 3, look at verse 23. It says this, and John also was baptizing in Anon near Salim, because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized. You know, these baby sprinkling idiots, they don't like to read this verse here. Like, well, we need to really go back to these original languages, because that can't mean what it says. But look at verse number 24. It says, for John was not yet cast into prison, verse 25. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And so here you have it. Now, you're going to see that these people want to try and persuade John the Baptist and try to convince him that he's inadequate, that he's not good enough for what he's doing. Look at verse 26. It says, and they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, He that was with thee beyond Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. So what he's saying, hey, all your subscribers are going that way. You better do something about it, John. What are you going to do? You know, somebody after a conference one time came up to me and said, you know, how does it feel knowing that you have to compete with these other preachers? I said, I didn't come here to compete. I came here to contribute. That is a loss mindset there, right? It is not wise to go to a conference. It's not wise to do men's preaching night. It's not wise to do these things of God and look at it as a competition. That is not good. That is not okay. But look how John responds here. John answered and said, a man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. That is the right attitude. That is the right perspective. Look at verse 28. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. Now jump down to verse number 30. He says this, he must increase, but I must decrease. You see what's going on here? John the Baptist is perfectly comfortable with the job that God has assigned him. He doesn't get filled with envy and like, oh yeah, maybe we should go ask Jesus, hey, you know, we need to get some more of your people. Hey, send us some more of your guys over here so that people don't forget about us. No, he understands. This is why I was sent here. This is what my purpose, this is what my mission is. And he owns that just like a boss. And so if you don't get anything else from this sermon, I want you to get this. A real boss doesn't have to talk about it because his life is built upon it. You see, John the Baptist, he wasn't lacking any kind of works. His life, his legacy, everything that he did, you know, it showed leadership. It demonstrated, it declared his love for the Lord. He didn't have to run around and boast about the fact that he's a boss. In fact, when people came to try to make him feel inadequate, you know what he did? He said, he must increase and I must decrease. And that's being a boss. And that's what the world looks at and says, you know what? That's not a boss. I don't want anything to do with that. The world's fickle, though, right? I mean, anytime there's a champion of any kind of a sport, you know, a top dog, as soon as they get beat, you watch the world, they turn their backs on them in a second. Hey, thank God that our kingdom is not like that at all. Because the works that we do, they have eternal value. And it takes a church full of people that decide, I will be a leader, I will be a boss to make that happen. Okay? So remember this, a real boss doesn't have to talk about it because his life is built upon it. If you would turn to 1 Samuel chapter number 17. 1 Samuel chapter number 17. You know, I'm sure that Pastor Shelley gets this call or email once in a while. I get it from time to time. And it's somebody saying, hey, you know, I've seen you online. I listen to you. I'm thinking about moving out there. And it's like, okay, great. And then they'll say something like this. The problem is, I need to know what kind of job positions that you have available. Like, we got the street, it's called Overland, and every single business has a we're hiring sign out in front of it. I mean, but that's not what they're after. Right? No. I want to know what kind of a job inside the church that you can give me. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Like, you want me to put you on staff? I don't have a staff. We have like 35 people, and we're still pretty small. And, you know, everybody has a job, though. They go soul winning, and they get paid, you know, eternal rewards, including me, you know. And they're like, well, the problem is I just don't want to take a step back from where I'm at. I'm like, well, what church do you go to right now? Why do you want to leave the church? I'm like, well, you know what? That's the thing. That's why I'm so valuable, is because, see, I can't go to church because none of them preach the right doctrines. I'm like, what? You don't even go to church? You don't even go to church? And you want me to hire you? You are absolutely crazy. But that's somebody, and those types of people are out there that just want to proclaim, hey, I'm a boss, right? But in reality, they're a total loss. To think they could call us, and you know what? You need to hire me because I'm something special. What have you done? I've never even heard of you. You're crazy. But that's the world that we live in today. 1 Samuel chapter number 17. So what I want to do now is I want to just kind of show you some things because obviously David turning those 600 men from wanting to stone him to wanting to follow him into battle, That wasn't the first boss thing that he ever did, okay? He obviously has a history. He obviously has a formula and a pattern that he learned before he ever got faced with that situation. And so what I want to do before I give you my first point is just kind of show you how he got that. 1 Samuel 17, I want you to look at verse number 33. It says this. And Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." So you know the story here. The Philistines, they're oppressing Israel. They're all scared. They don't know what to do. Even their king. Saul's like, well, you know, I don't know what we're going to do here. This guy's tough, whatever. And then so comes along David and's like, hey, what's the problem? You know, I'll go after him. And Saul's like, no, this is a bigger problem than you can handle. So David's not boasting here, but he is going to have to give his resume, which there's nothing wrong with doing. Look at verse 34. It says this, and David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. When he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And so what do we see David doing here? Well, he's telling Saul, he's like, hey, you can trust me because these are the things that I've been faced with, and these are the times that God has delivered me from adversity. So he's got a history of struggle, right? And that's the first point that I want to make this morning, is that bosses are built out of struggle. Bosses are built out of struggle. Look, you can leave your place there for now and go to Proverbs chapter number 12. Proverbs chapter number 12. But bosses are built out of struggle. And you say, why is leadership lacking in today's world in general? And I'll tell you, it's because of the disease of now. Everybody wants everything right now. I want to be a better preacher right now without putting in the work. I want to be a better whatever it is. I want to be a better mother, like right now. It's like, no, you need to struggle. You need to go through some struggles in life. You need to do some things that are hard. You see, this is something that is that I'm noticing is definitely lacking with the younger generations. It's like they're being taught to just flee any kind of discomfort. Now look, I'm not against the AC, especially in this day. You know, you need that AC, and even where we come from. But I'm talking about other things, you know. You need to struggle a little bit every single day. This is what I believe. I think the more that you struggle, the more you have to rely on God, and the more you're going to learn His provision for your life. The more you're going to realize, you know what, I can trust Him. And then when you get faced with those people that want to stone you, you're going to have the leadership ability to pull from right away to be able to turn that situation around. So valuable for moms, for dads, when these munchkins are coming at you. I mean, everything is just your fault, right? And they want to tear you apart. You know what? You got to have that leadership skill to be able to turn them around, right? Because you do want to keep their hearts, but you also want to administer discipline because that's what the Bible says is going to correct their behavior, right? And you know, there's two types of people in the world. There are people that are pleasure-driven, and there's people that are purpose-driven. And that's exactly what you see in 1 Samuel 30. You got 600 people. They just want everything to be okay, but they just want it to come to them. Whereas David's like, you know what? It's not just going to happen automatically. We need to do something about this. So he takes upon himself. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to encourage myself in the Lord. And I'm going to give my struggles, I'm going to give my problems to him. And he's going to help me out. And that's exactly what he does. Look, these stories are in here for a reason. We will face struggle. Things will not get easier from this day forward. It's not going to happen. We need to raise a generation of bosses is what we need. Everybody in here can be a boss. In whatever facet of life that you find yourself in, you have to learn to own it. Look, whatever row you're sitting in here, you need to own that. Own that. You know, you look over and, you know, after the service, somebody's grinding Play-Doh into the chairs. You know what? You don't have to go and, hey, you're kidding, you know, just be a leader. Go over there and clean that thing up and with a smile on your face. Learn to struggle. You might think, oh, these small things don't matter. No, those small things do matter, and they do add up over the years. Because I guarantee you that David, that lion and the bear, you know, the fact that he smote them, that wasn't the first thing that he ever did. I'll bet if we were to talk to him in real life, he had other struggles, right? Definitely not a man afraid of struggle. And that's exactly what we need to realize. So you're in Proverbs chapter number 12. Look at verse 24. It says this, the hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. You want to know why people have the victim mentality? It's because oftentimes they are slothful. You know, the church has an activity and they've got a volunteer sheet, right? Sign up for, you know, any way you're willing to help. And then you'll see people sometimes, probably not here, but I've, you know, in other churches I've been to, I've seen this. Well, how come she always signs up for the easy thing? How come he always signs up for the easy thing? It's the wrong attitude. You're not a boss if that's your attitude. You're a loss. You should never always be seeking the easy way out. Seek to struggle. Exercise initiative. We need this today desperately. It's lacking everywhere. It's lacking in the job force. Seriously lacking in the job force. You go to eat at a restaurant, it's like pulling teeth to have somebody even just do the basics of their job. Right? Hey, bring me a booster seat. Oh, man. Oh, I'm really trying here. Some of you have jobs like, I wish that was my job. Bring me a booster seat. But the principle is very simple here. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule. You need to be we need to be diligent in everything that we do. You know what? It starts by going to church every week. When those doors are open, you should be here. Because you know what? It's so much easier for the pastor and the leadership when he has a congregation full of bosses. And you know what? That's what happens to these 600 men, or a large portion of them, right? When you get through 2 Samuel, a lot of these people have been turned into mighty men. The SEAL Team 6 of the Old Testament, if you will. You say, how do people get like that? They get like that by being diligent. Because the Bible promises that you will bear rule. You will get entrusted with more responsibility. God is going to give you more stuff, and you'll be able to handle it. Bosses are born out of struggle. And if you're sitting here and you're like, you know what? I know in my heart that I'm lacking leadership. I'm lacking that department. You know, all of us can make room for improvements. Start finding ways to struggle every single day. I'm not talking about, you know, going to a monastery or some junk like that. But just find something that maybe you're uncomfortable with doing. You know, if you're not soul winning regularly, you know, just grab that intestinal fortitude and say, you know what, I'm going to go every day. You know, I've talked to you guys and I know you have no shortage of opportunities of going soul winning. There's always somebody in here that needs prayer. There's always somebody that needs edification or needs help. You know, pick somebody and go help them. You say, well, I'm shy. I'm not used to talking to people. Hey, welcome to the club, because so am I. When people find out that I'm a preacher, they're like, there's no way. There's no way. I would rather take an F on a test when I was in school than give a presentation. Any day of the week, but now I'm up here. Because, look, I learned a long time ago, the best way to go is to be diligent. That's what God has called us to be. That's what He wants. And you have no idea what God could place in your life, the works that you could do for the kingdom just by struggling. Because every struggle is only a season according to the Bible. You will get through that. You will overcome that with the help of the Lord. And then when you're faced with that big problem and it's time to rally the troops, you can say, hey, 5 years ago, I was in this situation. Here's how God helped me. Hey, 10 years ago, I was in this situation. Here's how God helped me. Why wouldn't He help me against these fags that are outside my church trying to discourage me from attending? Leadership today is just as important as it was back then. We still have the Philistines coming after us. They just do it in different tactics. They have different ways of doing business, you know? We need to get rid of that victim mentality and exchange it for the victor mentality. Yeah. Right? That's what we need. But yet, what you see today is that people, when they run from initiative, they run from leadership, they run from struggle, you watch those people, they will adopt the victim mentality. Oh, he owes me, she owes me, they owe me. Everything's everyone else's fault, right? That's what they'll say. That's how they wind up being. And it is so hard to manage and to lead a group of victims. We don't need that here. Leave that garbage to the world. And if you struggle with that, that's okay. We can help you. You can overcome that. And the first step that you need to make is finding ways to struggle. Add something small to your plate. I'm not saying sacrifice your family time, but find something else to go above and beyond what you're currently doing now. And that will get the ball rolling. Turn to 2 Kings chapter number 9. 2 Kings chapter number 9. So again, point number one is that bosses are built out of struggle. And because we live in a day and age where the disease of now, this comfort culture, is being pushed on us, it's difficult to find people to own up to their mistakes, to own up to the positions and the roles that they've been given by God, right? We need to change that. We need to turn that around. But what I want to do now is I want to move on and give you the second point here. We're going to take this from Jehu. Everybody loves you. I loved you. You know, I get it. He's got some issues, right? He's definitely rough around the edges. He's, you got that problem with those calves, big problem. But this guy, definitely a boss. And I want to take something here and show you this. 2 Kings chapter number 9 and verse 30. So we're going to read the story here where he's going to get rid of Jezebel. And I want you to notice the first thing that she tries to do to throw him off track, to prevent him from fulfilling his mission. Verse 30, 2 Kings 9, verse 30, look at this. It says this, "And when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her face and teared her head and looked out a window. And as Jehu entered in at the gate, she said, 'Had Zimri peace, who slew his master?'" So what is she trying to do here? She's trying to attack him emotionally and psychologically. She's trying to say, "Hey, you need to feel sorry for me. You wouldn't hurt a king's daughter now, would you? You wouldn't hurt a girl, would you?" Look at Jehu's attitude. Verse 22. "And he lifted up his face to the window and said, 'Who is on my side? Who?' And there looked out to him two or three eunuchs, and he said, 'Throw her down.' So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trode her underfoot." Look at verse 34. "And when he was come in, he did eat and drink and said, 'Go see now this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter.'" And so there's some things here that we could see about Jehu. Number one, he's obviously a boss, right? He had distractions thrown at him right off the bat. Right when he gets into town, she's like, "Hey, you wouldn't hurt a pretty girl, would you?" And he's not even fazed by this. Right? He's like, "Hey, who's on my side? Throw her down." Goes and makes a sandwich. Goes and eats their food. Right? That's a boss. That is a boss move. Okay? That is every time I read that, I'm like, wow, that just cracks me up. But here's the thing. The Bible also says that Jehu, you know, had this reputation that he driveth furiously. Everywhere he went, he was just kind of like a bull in a china shop. But you know what? He actually got to where he was going and did what he said he was going to do. At least we can attribute that to him, okay? And so here's the second point that I want to give you. A boss needs to learn to manage his time because time can produce anxiety and live with urgency. The biggest reason why we feel anxiety is because we see the clock ticking, don't we? And you moms, I know you know what I'm talking about. You got these munchkins running around, the husband's coming home, you got, you know, two kids crying, one wanting to tell you a story. You know your husband's going to be hungry, and you're just like, "What in the world am I going to do? You know, what happened to the homeschool day? You know, like, where am I even at?" And those types of things can give you anxiety. Guys face this a lot too, though. You know, because their boss, "Hey, can you stay extra? You know, can you work a little overtime? We know we really need you. But yet you signed up to do this extra soul winning." And you know, all these different things that go on can cause us to be filled with anxiety. And all anxiety will do to you is paralyze you. You get faced with a problem, you're filled with anxiety, you will become paralyzed by that problem. That is exactly why David did what he did, because he'd already been through the struggles. He already realized, you know what, God's going to help me. We have no time to waste. We need to inquire of the Lord. That's why when Jehu comes into town and she tries to slow him down, she tries to take time from him, she tries to buy time, what does he do? "I don't want any of that." He's like, "I don't have any time for your garbage." And he goes and he does the job with urgency. With urgency. We need to start living like the fact that time is limited and it is valuable. It's like currency. We need to be careful how we steward our time. And the biggest cause, I'm telling you, of the reason why you are anxious, why you get depressed, is because of time. If you do not get time management down, you're not going to get anything right. You're not going to get your Bible reading right. You're not going to get your soul winning right. You're not going to get your discipleship. You're not going to get your job, your family, and the list goes on. You have got to learn how to manage your time. It is very, very, very important. If you would, turn to Psalm chapter number 90. Psalm chapter number 90. And so we can see a boss learns to manage is time, because a lack of time will produce anxiety. This is what it does. And we need to live with urgency. You know, it's funny when we've got some schedule or we've got something going on, and I'll watch people sometimes and I'm like, man, the clock's ticking. You know, it's almost time to start. And there's this big thing that they're supposed to be doing. And they're just like, oh, I don't know. You know, well, that wall doesn't look as white as it did last week. And you're just plagued with problems that aren't even a big deal. And then they're like, oh, no. You know, hey, church is going to start in a couple of minutes. Oh, we got all this stuff. It's just like, calm down. The reason why you're feeling like this is because you failed to manage your time. You guys that are going to be preaching, you know what I'm talking about. You know, it's almost time. You're almost up. And you're wondering, man, is this even going to make sense? You know, you're running it through your head. Am I going to forget something? Yeah, probably. But you know what? If you properly take the time to prepare, it's going to minimize that anxiety for you. It's going to alleviate that completely. You know, same with soul winning. A lot of people get anxious. I don't know. I don't speak well. I don't do this. Look, take some time to practice and prepare your gospel presentation so that when you get to the door and you finally, that person says yes, you're not like, oh, you know, and your heart's beating, you know, and you're dropping the Bible and all this stuff. Manage your time and these things will become easier for you. Psalm chapter 90, look at verse number 12. It says this, "So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." And so we can see there we need to own the right attitude regarding our time. Whatever it is. I mean, this is so important here. Again, if you do not get time management down, your bosshood is going to turn into losshood. That's just the way it goes. That is the way of the world. And so just to kind of give you another little bit of application here, whatever it is right now that is taking up your time, that is impeding on your time, whatever it is, okay, you need to understand one thing, and that thing is not going to give itself back to you. Whatever is consuming your time, your hobby, and you know it, and that's why you're lacking in all these other areas, your family time, your church time, your preparation time, your Bible study, and you know in your heart that it's that hobby will not say, hey, you know what, you should put me down for a little while so that you can get your life in order. You need to own the fact that you know that thing is taking up your time and you need to repo it. You need to become the repo man and reclaim, repossess your time. You need to do a self audit and say, you know what? I don't really need this thing in my life right now. I can do without, because the things of God are far, far more valuable. And realize, hey, the stuff that you're doing for the kingdom, man, that has eternal value. That has eternal value. Live like that. Live with that urgency, because you don't know if you're even going to be able to go to church next week. Nobody in here knows what tomorrow holds. So we might as well live like it's our last day every day. Do the soul winning. Read your Bible. Live with that urgency. Look, we need this today. More than ever. The world's ramping up their games. They're ramping up their tactics. They're mustering their army right now as we speak. And we need all of us who are on board with the Word of God and God's doctrines to say, you know what? I'm going to own this. I'm not going to let them faze me. I'm not going to let these stupid things of the world impede my time. I'm going to give it up so that I can serve God with a whole heart, because that's exactly what He wants. Turn to John chapter number 6. John chapter number 6. So again, point number one is this. Bosses are built out of struggle. We need to struggle. We need to realize that the comfort culture of today is bad. It does not profit. Point number two, a boss learns to manage his time because bucking the system on time produces anxiety. Right? And we need to live with urgency. And you need to urgently find those things that are taking your time, because they will not give them back to you. It's not going to happen. You have to be the leader. You have to own that. You have to realize, this thing is taking up my time. I got to get rid of it. So we're going to move on to my third and final point here. And so, of course, you can't preach a boss sermon without mentioning the ultimate boss, which is Jesus Christ, the one who was nailed to the cross and 3 days later rose from the dead, who was seen in Revelation chapter 19 on a white horse with a vesture dipped in blood. That is the ultimate boss. The one who realized that we are at a total loss. We can't save ourselves. and said, you know what, I've got you. I will pay the price in full. And he paid it all. And he is happy to give that gift to whosoever will receive it. That is the ultimate boss here. And so we're going to pick this story up here in John chapter 6, where Jesus is getting ready to feed the 5,000. And so what has been going on when you compare this to Matthew chapter 14, you see that Jesus had been teaching, he had been healing the sick, and so this multitude is going to follow him. And I want you to notice the attitude of Philip and the disciples here, because he's going to test them. So let's pick it up here in verse number 3. It says this, "And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh." Verse 5, "And when Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat?" Now look at verse 6. "And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do." Of course, because he's the ultimate boss. Right? But he's trying to test these guys here. He's trying to show us something here. He's trying to give us an attitude that we need to live by in our lives. So let's keep reading. Look at what Philip says. Verse 7. "And Philip answered him, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many?" Verse 10, "And Jesus said, Make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And so in verse 7, you know, Philip's answer, that should anger all of us. And look, we all have a past with this, but that should anger all of us. So look what he says. "Well, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, you know, for everybody to take a little." So instantly, he's faced with a problem. He becomes paralyzed by that problem. And he's like, just tell them to go away and buy food at the market. Just get them out of here. Send them to McDonald's. Send them to Church's Chicken. You know, get them out of here because we can't do anything. Look, I don't know about you guys, but in my life, I have learned to hate that attitude. When you go up and you tell somebody, hey, we're gonna do this. I've got this vision here. I've got this problem. There's a bunch of people in this small town. They've never heard the gospel. Oh, we can't go there because we all live too far away. Boy, that should get everybody in here upset when you hear something like that. You know, you present a big mission to somebody and they're just like, oh, first thing out of their mouth, every single time, oh, we can't. I hate that. I hate that so much. And I've spent sermon after sermon after sermon driving that attitude out of our church, which thank God we drove 20 people along with it. And I've heard there's been a lot more here. So you guys know exactly what I'm talking about here. Look, if you've got that attitude and you know it, look, please change it. I'm going to show you how to do that. Because what that does is it leavens the whole lump. Gets people upset. It's not profitable. We have the ultimate boss on our side. And the first thing out of our mouths is, we can't do that. That's the wrong attitude to have. And you know what? A church full of people with that lost attitude is what destroys churches. That's what destroys Christians right there, that attitude. This is why Jesus is telling us, hey, just make them sit down. I've got an issue. I already know what I'm going to do, which, by the way, is another boss principle, right? The more you struggle, the more you manage your time, the more things you go through and that the Lord helps you to overcome, again, when you're faced with these problems, you're going to already know what you should do. You're not going to be like, okay, I've got 3 people that just passed out. I'm not sure what's going on. Let me just go outside and think about it for a minute. No, you kind of know. I better pick up the phone and call 911, okay? So here's the third point that I want to make. Becoming a boss means becoming a problem solver. Becoming a boss means becoming a problem solver. There's always problem makers. They're always going to be around. Sometimes I'm one of them. Yeah, just ask my wife, she'll tell you. Sometimes he's the problem maker. But you know what? We need to learn to become problem solvers as well. And by the way, this can help you tremendously. Turn to Judges chapter 4. You can leave your place there in John 6. But turn to Judges chapter number 4. Becoming a boss means becoming a problem solver. And to show you what this looks like, I want to use Judges chapter 4 and talk about Jael, a female who was a boss. Now, it's a sad situation here because if you're familiar with Barak and Deborah, you know that men at this time, they were weak. They weren't being bosses. The women were bosses and the men were losses. The role was flipped. right? And so we're going to read Judges chapter 4 here and kind of learn some practical application. But look at verse number 20, Judges chapter 4, verse 20. So as the cycle goes, you know, Israel's under oppression. God has sent them, you know, some help, some judges that are going to deliver them from the enemies. Look at verse 20. It says this. So this is Sisera here. It says, "And again, he said unto her, stand in the door of the tent, and it shall be, when any man doth come and inquire of thee, and say, is there any man here, that thou shalt say no." Right? So the story is Barak's, you know, he's trying to chase Sisera down. He's got all these chariots of iron. He's got like 900 chariots of iron. Israel's been afraid of him for a long time. And so finally, God is delivering Israel out of this oppression. And this captain here, this guy Sisera, a problem, is all of a sudden at this woman's door. And he's like, "Hey, here's what you're going to do." I'll bet if I were to ask for a show of hands, there's no man in here that would allow another man to come to your house and start telling your wife what to do. Right? "Hey, stand at the door here and tell the cops to go away." I'd be like, "You need to call the hearse because you're going to die." Look at verse 21. "Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent and took a hammer in her hand and went softly unto him and smote him. I'm sorry, it smote the nail into his temples and fastened it to the ground. For he was fast asleep and weary. So he died. And behold, as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said unto him, Come, and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. And when he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead, and the nail was in his temples." And so Sisera, in this story here, represents a problem. And this problem comes to Heber's house. And we don't know what he's up to. He's taking a nap, or maybe he's playing Call of Duty. I don't really know. But he's not being the protector that God has called him to be. He's definitely not leading his house well. But I find it interesting here that Jael, she doesn't skip a beat. She's like, "Okay, I'm faced with this problem." The guy asks, "Hey, give me a little water because I'm thirsty." He's like, "No, you're going to drink this milk here." And she covers him up, gets him all nice and comfortable, right? Because moms are good at putting people down for a nap. She's like, "I'll put you down for a nap here." And you know what she does? She nails her problem down. She gets right to the point. That's what she does. And you know what, you moms out there, you need to read this story like that, because sometime your little sister problem comes in and tells you, "Hey, you're going to do this. I'm here to dictate how the day is going." Right? And you need to learn to nail those little problems down one by one. And it can be a struggle, because sometimes these little chubby cheekers are so cute, it's like, "Man, I really don't want to tell them no." You know, my youngest daughter, Kinley, you know, she's just full of life. Right? Both my daughters are. But I can remember when she was younger, and she did something that she deserved a spanking for, and I was getting ready to give it, and she said something super funny, and I just started busting up laughing. I've got the spatula, and I'm just dead laughing. And I looked at my wife, and I was like, I just went and put it away. I was like, "I'm going to take the loss on this one," because, you know, but that was the wrong thing for me to do. You know, she actually got me, and, you know, thank God, you know, I got stronger in the faith, and I learned to correct that little kid. Because she definitely needs it. So if you would, turn to Proverbs chapter number 20. I should have told you to keep your place there, but turn to Proverbs chapter number 20. And so I want you to see there another thing that Jael does, and it's the application. Again, we need to learn to focus on the solution more so than the problem. You see, people who become paralyzed by their problems, it's all they can see is the problem. I can't. I need help. And they just can't do anything. But when we adopt this mindset, you know what? We're going to look on the solution or look for a solution more so than focusing on the problem. That's going to free up that anxiety, get that ball rolling, and it's going to help us to become problem solvers. Okay? Proverbs chapter 20, look down at verse number 18. The Bible says this: "Every purpose is established by counsel, and with good advice make war." So when possible, when you have that opportunity, you need to seek counsel. And what better way to seek counsel than to regularly attend church? Look, you guys who live here or even anywhere near here, this is where it's at. I mean, I want to move here. Sometimes, you know, I'm like, "Man, this is great. You know, I like it." We got out of the airport and it was just like tons of stuff and people. I was just like, "Wow." Don't get me wrong, I like Boise. It's great. But you have a great thing going on here. You guys are doing great works. The more bosses, that we have inside of this room, the more those satellite churches will grow, the more everything will work smoothly, the more everything will be efficient, right? The more problem solvers we have, the less problem makers we have, because problem makers do not like to attach themselves or even be around problem solvers. People, I'm talking about people who are just, they just love it. They just love being problem makers. Everything is against me. Everything is because I'm just, this is my lot in life. You know that mentality, that victim mentality, we have got to get rid of that. Yeah. All that does is paralyze an organization. You know, the place that I work for, like, they're so liberal, you know, that any, like, if you just, you know, say anything to them, like, you know, I'm not doing that, I'm not coming to work today, they're like, okay, no problem. And they just don't want any problem. Anytime a customer calls and, hey, you know, this guy just scratched my refrigerator, and I've got a picture that I took with a timestamp before I even started working on it with that same scratch. They're like, oh, we're just going to pay for it anyways. You know, just tell him you did it. It's okay. No, I'm not going to do that. I didn't do it. Well, I guess I gave it away. Who did it, right? It was me. But, you know, these are things that I see all the time. You know, these organizations, another reason why they're just tumbling down is because they don't have people inside of them that can solve problems. They've got most of the people in there making problems. But you know what? Those are the type of people that we need to go out and get saved, and we need to get them out of that attitude. We need to pull them away from that and educate them. Hey, that's not the way to be. We don't want to be a loss. We want to be a boss. Not the way that the world says it. LeBron James, he's not a boss. Joe Biden? Give me a break. Kamala Harris? No. Those aren't bosses. Those are total losses. And so I'm going to wrap this thing up. And again, I want to leave you this statement. A real boss doesn't have to talk about it, because a real boss's life is built upon it. That's what needs to be said about this church. Look, and you guys have that reputation. People that either love you or hate you, they know one thing, that you guys mean business. Pastor Shelley, your pastor, he means business. He's got an excellent group of people in here that are going to decide to be bosses and not be losses. And you know what? I always take the attitude, let's try to help these people that are struggling with these things first, right? Let's not just instantly ridicule them. Let's try to disciple them. Let's struggle with them a little bit. Let's work with them. Let's be long-suffering. Let's have some patience and see if they're even possibly trainable to be teachable, okay? And then from that point on, we'll move forward. Because here's what I know. I know that for your pastor, and I know for the staff, and I know for just everybody who comes to church, a church can do far more and run far more efficiently when it's filled with bosses instead of losses. So let's bow our heads and have a word of prayer. Thank you so much, Lord, for the teachings in your word. Just want to pray, Lord, that we would all be comfortable, like John the Baptist was, Lord, with the position that you've given us, whatever it is in life, husband, father, Lord, grandfather, child, teen. And then we would own that, Lord, and seek to improve ourselves daily and improve our leadership and go out and fulfill the commission that you've given us. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.